Palestinian Foreign Ministry urges the International Criminal Court to end its silence and launch an investigation into Israel's crimes against the Palestinians. Iran warns that any unconstructive action at the upcoming IAEA Board of Governors meeting will be met with a strong response. Also ahead, four people are killed in a shooting on a hospital campus in Tulsa, Oklahoma, as gun violence continues to claim more lives across the United States. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour, Israeli forces have fatally shot another Palestinian in a raid on a village in the north of the occupied West Bank. Palestinian Health Ministry says the 24-year-old man died after arriving at a hospital in Jenin in a critical condition. He had been shot by Israeli forces, live bullets in the chest and the thigh. The ministry says six other Palestinians were injured in the raid on the village of Yabad near the city of Jenin. The Hamas resistance movement reacted to the Israeli raid, saying the people of Jenin will continue to resist the occupying forces until throwing them out of Palestine. The Palestinian Foreign Ministry also condemned the killing, urging the International Criminal Court to probe the regime's crimes. Earlier on Wednesday, Israeli soldiers shot dead a 31-year-old Palestinian woman near the West Bank city of El Khalil. Meanwhile, people in the besieged Gaza Strip have protested to drum up support for thousands of Palestinians prisoners inside Israeli jails, especially administrative detainees. Solidarity with Palestinian prisoners has been a top priority for activists in Gaza, who say they are determined to stand by the prisoners for as long as it takes. Ashraf Shannon has more in this report.
Families of prisoners and their advocates staged a sit-in inside the office of the International Committee of the Red Cross in the blockaded Gaza Strip. Their action was in solidarity with thousands of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails and detention centers, including more than 500 administrative detainees. Palestinian administrative detainees have been boycotting Israeli regime courts for more than 5 months to protest their administrative detention. Administrative detention is incarceration without trial or charge and has no time limit.
Administrative detainees are subjected to extreme suffering inside Israeli jails. They've been boycotting Israeli courts for more than 150 days to protest the detention without charge. Administrative detention is a racist policy and only causes pain and suffering to Palestinian prisoners.
Palestinian prisoners suffer from inhumane treatment inside Israeli jails and are being denied basic rights. Since the beginning of this year, Israeli regime forces have arrested some 3,000 Palestinians, including children and women.
Administrative detention is a systematic policy by the Israeli regime to hold Palestinian prisoners behind bars without trial for a very long time. Administrative detention can be renewed indefinitely, and it inflicts psychological pressure on the prisoners. We have all suffered from administrative detention inside Israeli jails.
During a press conference outside the Red Cross office, the Ministry of Detainees Affairs slammed the inhumane Israeli policy of administrative detention.
We call on all international human rights organizations to come out of their silence and exert pressure on the Israeli regime to stop the inhumane administrative detention policy. Palestinian prisoners are freedom fighters and must be treated according to international laws and norms. The Israeli regime is violating conventions regarding the treatment of prisoners.
Rights activists say Palestinian prisoners held in Israeli jails will continue to suffer as long as the world keeps turning a blind eye to Tel Aviv's violations of their rights.
According to Palestinian prisoners' advocacy groups, the Israeli regime has arrested around 1 million Palestinians since 1967. Most of these detainees have been held with no charge or trial. Ashraf Shannon, Gaza.
Elsewhere, Iran has hit back at the US, the UK, France and Germany after reports said they have prepared a draft resolution to push the IAEA's Board of Governors to rebuke Iran at its upcoming meeting.
Israeli regime as the world's number one JCPOA hater happens to be NPT denier and the only nuke possessor of the Middle East and North Africa region. We know this. The world knows this. Time for the E3 and the US to stop pretending to be asleep. They can pursue diplomacy or pursue the opposite. We are ready for both.
Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman earlier warned that Tehran will give a strong and proportionate response to any unconstructive action against the Islamic Republic at the IAEA meeting. Said Khatibzadeh also said those using a recent IAEA report on Tehran's nuclear activities as a political tool will be responsible for the ensuing consequences. No end to gun violence in the United States. Now police say five people, including a gunman, are dead in a shooting on a hospital campus in Tulsa, Oklahoma. A Tulsa police official said he believed the victims included hospital employees and patients. Local officials say the shooter apparently died of a self-inflicted wound. Police are trying to determine the man's identity, saying he was aged between 35 and 40. The shooter's motive is still unknown. Police say he carried a rifle and a handgun. The new incident took place only days after a mass shooting at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas, which claimed 22 lives, including the attacker. Moscow warns that the European Union's sanctions on Russia's oil will negatively affect the entire Europe as well as the global energy market. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov issued the warning in response to a partial oil embargo by the EU targeting Russia's seaborne oil exports. Peskov said Moscow is taking measures to minimize the effects of the sanctions approved on Monday. He added Russia can reroute its oil exports and find alternatives. The EU's latest move is part of a measure to halt around 90% of Russia's oil sales to bloc members by the end of the year. The bloc has imposed six rounds of sanctions on Russia. Since the beginning of the war that is in Ukraine, Moscow has repeatedly warned that such bans will cause more trouble for the EU rather than for Russia itself. Russia's foreign minister says the U.S. plan to supply advanced missile systems to Ukraine raises the risk of a third country getting dragged into the conflict. Sergei Lavrov was responding to questions about a new U.S. military package for Ukraine. Meanwhile, Russia's deputy foreign minister said the arms delivery increases the possibility of drawing Washington into direct confrontation with Moscow. Earlier, the Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said the U.S. is using Ukrainians' lives in order to maintain its fight against Russia.
We believe the U.S. is deliberately pouring fuel on the fire. The U.S. is clearly holding the line that it will fight Russia to the last Ukrainian. These supplies of weapons do not arouse a desire in the Ukrainian leadership to restart peace talks. This is why our position on this is negative.
The U.S. has approved to provide Ukraine with advanced precision strike rocket systems that can hit long-range targets. The Pentagon says it is initially providing Ukraine with four batteries of such systems. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says Kiev has promised Washington that it won't use the systems against targets inside Russia. The rocket systems are part of an additional $700 million U.S. military aid package that was approved on Wednesday. Washington had earlier approved a huge $40 billion aid package for Kiev. Russia says the U.S. is seeking to wage a proxy war by supplying unprecedented military aid to Ukraine. The people of Denmark have voted yes in a referendum held to decide whether the country should join the European Union's common defense policy. The final results showed almost 60 7% of Danes were in favour of their country becoming part of the EU's common security and defence policy. Around 33% of voters opposed the move. Denmark is the only EU member not bound by the bloc's common defence and security policy. The referendum signalled the latest policy shift among Nordic countries as more European states seek to deepen defence ties in response to the war in Ukraine. Sweden and Finland have applied for NATO membership, whereas Germany has decided to spend more than $100 billion to modernise its army. The Russia-Ukraine war continues to deal a blow to the global economy, with the Eurozone now reporting a record-breaking inflation as European countries ramp up pressure on Russia in the form of sanctions and military aid to Ukraine. They too are feeling the pinch of inflation amid skyrocketing prices. Meanwhile, energy prices are also increasing amid division among EU members when it came to buying or not buying Russian gas.
Prices in the Eurozone continued their march higher in May as the inflation rate hit a record high of 8.1%. This is the seventh consecutive month of record high inflation in the 19 countries that share the euro. The inflation in May is up from April's record high of 7.4% and higher than expectations of 7.8%. This comes after inflation prints from several major European economies surprised to the upside in recent days.
Yes, well, this trend has been going on for months now, and it has exceeded even the most negative predictions of Eurozone central banks and the European Central Bank.
German inflation came in at an annual 8.7% in May. It significantly outstripped analysts' expectations of 8% and marked a sharp incline from the 7.8% seen in April. Germany is planning to ease pressure on consumers through a series of policies, including cheap monthly tickets for regional public transport between June and August and a discount for drivers at gas stations.
This is partly to blame on the energy crisis that has been exaggerated by the ongoing war in Ukraine, but also on matters that are beyond Europe's reach, like the lockdown in China and also other factors in European economies.
French inflation also surpassed expectations in May to a notch record 5.8%, up from 5.4% in April. France's economy contracted in the first quarter of the fiscal year under the impact of soaring inflation. The economy shrank 0.2% from the previous quarter after last year's strong 6.8% recovery as the COVID-19 pandemic eased. Spanish consumer prices also jumped by an annual 8.5% in May, exceeding expectations of 8.1%. Inflation in the Eurozone is now four times more than the ECB target of 2%.
The Eurozone inflation has reached 8.1%, up from 7.4% in the previous month. But inflation is not just restricted to Europe. This has become a global headache, including for the UK and the US. Central banks are scrambling to deal with the problem. Raising interest rates is their only option as fears grow that a recession is around the corner.
Multiple factors have contributed to the rising inflation rate in the Eurozone. First and foremost is a rising energy price. Across the Eurozone, the record annual consumer price increase was driven by soaring energy costs, which hit 39.2%. That's up from 37.5% in April.
I think that it was all calculated in the decision-making process of the European leaders. I think most of the countries are now dealing with this extreme rise of gas and oil prices, especially oil, is hitting European consumers very hard. But the political pressure from the Eastern European countries and from the US, but also from big European countries, was for this oil embargo on Russia. And it was like a political, let's say, bet.
The European Union leaders have struck a deal to ban the majority of Russian oil imports over Moscow's military operation in Ukraine. The agreement covers more than two-thirds of oil imports from Russia. The measure is expected to further push up energy prices. Then there are disruptions in the global supply chains. The world economy is still reeling from COVID-related bottlenecks, and the war in Ukraine has caused serious disruptions to global trade. And finally, COVID lockdowns in China have put further strain on the global economy.
So right now, central banks are in a somehow deadlock situation because there are no easy way out of this inflationary trend. There is also the risk of creating a recession if the rise in rates and the contraction of the expansion of the economy is very abrupt.
ECB President Christine Lagarde and Chief Economist Philip Lane, in a bid to contain inflation, have already announced certain measures, but economists doubt if they will be enough. Earlier this month, European Central Bank President Lagarde said she was anticipating a rate rise at the central bank's meeting in July. The move could cause another recession in the Eurozone.
Brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In the U.S., some Republicans see an opening for a post-Trump candidate in the 2024 presidential election, with so many of Donald Trump's endorsed candidates falling to defeat in recent primaries. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalist Shane Goldmacher, Maggie Haberman, and Rachel Shorey. The piece is titled Trump's Primary Losses Puncture His Invincibility. Stay with us for more. Donald J. Trump has cast this year's primaries as a moment to measure his power, endorsing candidates by the dozen as he sought to maintain an imprint on his party unlike any other past president. But after the first phase of the primary season concluded on Tuesday, a month in which a quarter of America's states cast their ballots, the verdict has been clear. Donald Trump's aura of untouchability in Republican politics has been punctured. In more than 5 years, from when he became president in January of 2017 until May of 2022, Donald Trump had only ever seen voters reject a half a dozen of his choices in Republican primaries. But by the end of this month, that figure has now more than doubled, with his biggest defeat coming on Tuesday when Governor Brian Kemp of Georgia thrashed a Trump-backed challenger by more than 50 percentage points. Three other Trump recruits challenging Kemp allies also went down to defeat. The mounting losses have emboldened Donald Trump's rivals inside the Republican Party to an extent not seen since early 2016, and increased the chances that, should he run again in 2024, he would face serious competition. "I think a non-Trump with an organized campaign would have a chance," said Jack Kingston, a former Georgia congressman who advised the first Trump presidential campaign. Donald Trump remains broadly popular among Republicans and has a political war chest well north of $100 million. But there has been a less visible sign of slippage. Trump's vaunted digital fundraising machine has begun to slow down. An analysis by the New York Times shows that his average daily online contributions have declined every month for the last 7 months that federal data is available. Donald Trump has gone from raising an average of $324,633 per day in September of 2021 on WinRed, the Republican donation processing portal, to $202,185 in March of 2022, even as he ramped up his political activities and profile. Those close to Donald Trump and even Republicans who aren't caution against misreading the significance of primary losses in which he himself was not on the ballot. Governor Brian Kemp, for instance, took pains not to say a cross word about the former president to avoid alienating his loyal base. "To be the man, you have to beat the man," said Jim Hobart, a Republican pollster with Public Opinion Strategies. And until Trump either bows out of electoral politics or is beaten by a Republican at the ballot box, his strength remains. Rivals, including his own former Vice President Mike Pence, are gearing up for a potential presidential run as he and others visit key early states like Iowa and ramp up their own fundraising operations. Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida has amassed a $100 million re-election war chest and is the talk of many donors, activists, and voters interested in the future of Trumpism without Donald Trump. "Donald Trump had 4 good years, said Cole Muzio, president of the Frontline Policy Council, a conservative Christian group based in Georgia, who voted twice for Mr. Trump, but is now looking for someone more forward-looking. Ron DeSantis is great about seeing where the left is going and playing on the field that they're going to be on, rather than reacting to what happened a couple of years ago," Mr. Muzio said, echoing the frustration that Donald Trump continues to obsess about denying his 2020 election loss. Cole Muzio, whose organization is hosting former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo at his fall gala headliner, spoke as he waited to hear Mike Pence this week in Kennesaw, Georgia, at a rally for Brian Kemp, all names he included in the party's deep bench of 2024 alternatives. Donald Trump still remains the most coveted endorsement in his party, and he has boosted some big winners. Sarah Huckabee Sanders in Arkansas virtually cleared the field for governor with Donald Trump's support, and Representative Ted Budd in North Carolina defeated a past governor to win his party's Senate nomination. Yet the difficult primary season has added to Donald Trump's personal anxieties about his standing, after he has sought to fashion himself as something of an old-school party boss in his post-presidency. He has told advisers he wants to declare his candidacy or possibly launch an exploratory committee this summer. Most of Donald Trump's advisers believe he should wait until after the midterm elections to announce a candidacy. Yet the sense among Republicans that Mr. Trump has lost political altitude is taking hold, including among some of those close to Trump himself. Taylor Bodewich, a Trump spokesman, said the undeniable reality is that Republicans rely on Donald Trump to fuel Republican victories in 2022 and beyond. President Trump's political operation continues to dominate American politics, raising more money and driving more victories than any other political organization, bar none, Mr. Bodewich said. Some Republican strategists have fixated on the fact that so many of Donald Trump's endorsees have landed about one-third of the vote. Big winners, J.D. Vance in Ohio, losers, Jody Heiss in Georgia, Janice McGeachin in Idaho, and Charles Herbster in Nebraska, and those headed for a recount, Dr. Mehmet Oz in Pennsylvania. One-third of the party is at once an unmatched base of unbending loyalists, and yet a cohort far from a majority. Notably, Donald Trump's share of what is raised overall among all Republicans online has also declined. Mr. Trump's main fundraising committee accounted for 19.7% of what was raised by Republican campaigns and committees on Win Red in the last 4 months of 2021, but just 14.1% of what was raised during the first 3 months of 2022. Some of that decrease is the result of other candidates on the ballot raising more this year. Still, only 10 times since July of 2021 has Donald Trump's committee accounted for less than 10% of the money raised on Win Red during a single day. And 9 of those instances came in March of 2022, the last month that data was available. The vocal opposition is no longer just confined to anti-Trump forces inside the Republican Party. Out is also evident in the pro-Trump mainstream. When a triumphant Brian Kemp, whom Mr. Trump had targeted because he refused to go along with his efforts to subvert the 2020 presidential election, arrived in Nashville, Tennessee on Thursday to speak before a gathering of the Republican Governors Association, he received a standing ovation. There is this temptation to engage in wish-casting in which this is the moment in which Trump is slipping, said Charlie Sykes, a conservative anti-Trump commentator. On the other hand, what happened in Georgia was significant. He drew a bright red line, and voters just stampeded across it. Mr. Sykes said the current GOP very much remains Donald Trump's party, even as he saw a distinction between Trumpism and Donald Trump himself. The critical question, as he put it, is whether Republican voters are in a let's-give-him-the-gold-watch-and-let's-move-on mood. Mike Pence, whom Donald Trump publicly condemned as rioters swarmed the Capitol during the certification of the 2020 Electoral College vote, has made travels to early states. A favorite of evangelical voters, he has sought to highlight his support for ending abortion rights as the Supreme Court prepares for a possible decision undoing the landmark Roe v. Wade ruling. Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, a Republican who has been a hawk on immigration and China since before the Trump presidency, has positioned himself as a potential heir to Trumpism. Tom Cotton has also drawn a contrast with Mr. Trump from the right, vocally criticizing the First Step Act, a criminal justice reform bill that the former president signed into law as a liberal law. Two former top Trump administration officials, Mike Pompeo and Nikki Haley, the former United Nations ambassador, are making endorsements, traveling and building up their political infrastructure. Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina recently announced another trip to Iowa and has been investing heavily in his digital fundraising operation. Tim Scott has said that This will be his last term in the Senate, but he continues to pad a $23.4 million campaign treasury despite facing only token opposition. Mr. Scott has more than 1,000 times as much money as his closest rival, a Democrat with $23,199. Even some of Trump's allies, like right-wing media host Stephen Bannon, speak for a swathe of one-time Trump voters when they condemn the coronavirus vaccines that Donald Trump championed while president. Numerous Republican strategists have argued that Mr. Trump's continued obsession with the 2020 election is an unwanted distraction in 2022, when Democrats hold the levers of power in Washington, and opinion polls show most of the country feels like the nation is moving in the wrong direction.
Food for thought.
Salam, friends. And today, on the auspicious birth anniversary of our innocent Lady of Qom, Hazrat Fatima Masume, peace upon her, the daughter of the Prophet's seventh infallible successor, Imam Musa Kazem, peace upon him, we present you a saying from her grandfather, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him. Soon a lady by the name Fatima from my family will be buried in Qom. Paradise becomes obligatory on the one who visits her.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Seventh Imam, Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salatu wa salam, is actually known as Bab al-Hawaij.
Qala al-Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam, khayru al-umuri awsatuha.
Ziyarah of Imam Musa ibn Ja'far al-Kazim alayhi salam.
As-salamu alayka ya Mawlai, Musa ibn Ja'far wa rahmatullah.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome, dear listeners, and I'm your host, Mahdi. We're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam. Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was also the seventh divinely appointed Imam among the household of the Holy Prophet Muhammad. Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam led a life which was in balance and harmony with that of the Prophet Muhammad, his great-great-grandfather. His life and the life of Imam al-Kazim was in the line and the direction of the Prophet Muhammad. and of course the life of Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam was a strict adherence and obedience of Islam in so many different ways, whether it was his ethics, his morals, his behaviors, his actions, his statements. We find that Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam was the copy of the Holy Prophet Muhammad of Islam, the messenger of Allah. Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam led an upright, righteous, and noble life. These are his dialogues.
قال الإمام الكاظم عليه السلام قل الحق وإن كان فيه هلاكك فإن فيه نجاتك ودع الباطل وإن كان فيه نجاتك فإن فيه هلاكك.
Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam stated, speak the truth even if it entails your own ruin, for verily your deliverance is therein. And abandon falsehood, even if it entails your deliverance, for truly therein is your ruin.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. Dear friends, when we talk about the beautiful conversations and the golden dialogues of the divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam, we find that His Eminence talked about worshipping when it came to the conversations and the dialogues with his friends, his family members, and his relatives. And when it comes to worshipping, of course, we find that Imam al-Kadhim, he spoke to his companions and he spoke to his relatives and the people in general. He taught them via these conversations that worshipping Allah is something that has no limits. Now, this might seem a little bit strange to us, and we might think, well, how is it possible that worshipping Allah has no limits? But interestingly, it is true. For if we look at the way that worshipping is and its essence, we worship Allah based upon the fact that He deserves to be worshipped. Now, how much does Allah the Mighty, the Exalted, truly deserve to be worshipped? Well, the limits to the worship that Allah deserves is truly limitless. And so in this conversation, Imam al-Kadhim says to his companion, do not take out of yourself this idea that you are falling short of worshipping Allah. For surely, all the worship that is assigned to Allah, the Great, the Almighty, is worship that is less than what is due to Him. And so in this response to this question from his companion, asking him about the limits of worship, we find that Imam al-Kadhim really said that no matter how much we worship Allah, it is less than what Allah, the Mighty, the Exalted, deserves. Of course, when you start to think about the attributes of Allah, you do realize that no matter how much we worship Allah, it is less than what is truly due to Him. And so, dear friends, we should try our best to worship Allah as much as we can, but with sincerity, with a purity of heart and a purity of intention. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Hamza Sodagar.
The aspect of, or I should say, one of the aspects that made the imamah of Imam al-Kazim, salamullah alayhi, very critical is the conditions that ended up being the conditions of the ummah and the conditions of the movements of the Ahlul Bayt during that period. The period of the leadership of Imam al-Kazim, salamullah alayhi, in this timeline of the movement of the Ahlul Bayt after they no longer had governance, they no longer ruled after Imam al-Mujtaba's few months. The movement arrived at a very critical moment at the time of Imam al-Kazim, salamullah alayhi. That moment is that while the people were encouraged to rise for justice, rise to have Islam rule, to have the Quran rule, to have those who know the Quran rule, to have those who know the Prophet and his Sunnah to rule, to have those that the Prophet said, they along with the Quran I'm leaving behind. And if you grab a hold of these two, the Quran and Itrati Ahla Bayti, you will not be lost. They were encouraging the people, educating the people, spreading this information from Islam about what is correct authority and rule in Islam and what is injustice and what the people's responsibility towards it is. This movement had begun and it had reached a point where people were willing to come out and rise, and they were willing to come and sacrifice, they were willing to fight. They did come forward.
Listening to this episode of Dialogue, don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
A bridge too scary for many, but just the right place for those with a head for heights. Vietnam has opened the world's longest glass-bottom bridge to the public.
The now recorded longest glass-bottom cliffside pathway, and it's spectacular, the engineering required to build that into the side of a cliff but maintain all the features of nature, the greenery, the rock, has been an amazing project, very successful, and I think it will attract a lot of tourists.
The White Dragon Suspension Bridge fittingly opened with a dragon dance. The structure is longer than the previous record holder in China and has two sections. One stretches over 630 meters between two mountains, while the other runs around a cliffside. Visitors can look straight down at the valley 150 meters below. The structure is safe and made from three layers of 40 millimeter tempered glass. The contemporary ceramics exhibition kicks off at the Villa d'Atres Art Foundation near the French city of Avignon. The exhibit showcases nearly 130 artworks of all sizes. Some are so big they are put on display outdoors. The foundation has created these modern forms from roughly 100 artists from all over the world. The exhibit displays an exceptional diversity of eclectic works presenting sophisticated skills and artistry. Participating artists say working with clay and playing with glazes always produces a unique item that often generates a profoundly universal reaction. The goal of the event is to show how ceramic art has returned to the forefront of the contemporary art scene. The annual Vivid Life Festival has returned to Sydney after being cancelled 2 years in a row due to the coronavirus pandemic. The event kicked off with fireworks and lighting the sails of the Sydney Opera House. Iconic structures like the Sydney Harbour Bridge and the Museum of Contemporary Art Australia are part of a series of new canvases this time around. As an added treat, the 2022 festival also has the longest continuous light walk in the history of the event. Plus, this year's highlights include a choreographed light show by 600 drones. Both residents and tourists have been anticipating the return of this show.
I saw it about 8 years ago, I think, and it's just got better and better, as far as I can tell. I mean, the Opera House is the most amazing canvas possible to project, this just amazing digital artwork. The vibrancy of it, the colour of it, the animation of it, the explosiveness of it, the colour just bursts out in just amazing ways. That the snakes, the chameleons, the lizards crawling across it.
The Harbour City will glow with 50 light installations, the projection artworks, as well as over 100 musical events. Vivid Sydney is an annual festival that lasts for 23 nights, infusing art, innovation and technology while collaborating with boundary-pushing artists. In 2019, the festival attracted millions of attendees. The event is owned and managed by the Tourism and Major Events Agency of the Government of New South Wales. Chilean scientists believe they have found the world's oldest living tree in a lush green forest in the south of the country. The scientists say their study shows an ancient cypress known as the Great Grandfather might have beaten the record for the world's oldest tree by six centuries. The bristlecone pine tree in eastern California is the current record holder with over 4,800 years of age. The scientist who led the study says the sample they extracted and other dating methods suggest that the Chilean cypress with a 4 meter thick trunk is over 5,000 years old.
We could count all the rings, but we know it's not the tree's age. It's an estimation of what we call a minimum age. So for this kind of tree, the scientific challenge is to estimate with science the part that we do not see and that is missing. And that is what we did with the millennial alersi. This method tells us that 80% of all possible growth trajectories give us an age of this living tree greater than 5,000 years. There's only a 20% chance that the tree is younger.
Borichevich is, however, concerned about visitors harming the tree, which is located in the Costero National Park. He says visitors are still able to circle the tree's base, step on its roots, and even take pieces of its bark. The tree is a conifer native to Chile and Argentina and can grow to heights of up to 45 meters.
The world's oldest living man has just turned 113 years and says he's going to be around at least 10 more years. Good for him. Born on May the 27th, 1909 in Venezuela, Juan Vicente Perez Mora is still in pink of his health and memory and does not take medication. He has no trouble recalling his childhood marriage and the names of his siblings, children and grandchildren. He has 41 grandchildren, by the way. So what is the secret behind a long life? Work hard, rest on holidays, go to bed early, love for God, and always carry him in your heart. The Guinness World Records declared Peres Mora the oldest living person last week. The meadows in the foothills of the Swiss Alps have turned white these days, with locals calling it May snow. But it has nothing to do with snow. It's all about narcissus blooms covering the hills above the town of Montreux. Locals call the scene May snow because it looks like a blanket of snow from a distance. The flowers have been a tourist attraction since the 19th century, but factors such as urbanization have caused their decline in the past few years.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Humans have disrupted the turtle survival for years due to their greed for meat, eggs, skin, and shells. But the decreasing population of the species is creating conscious of conservation. Cambodians have released hundreds of turtles of an endangered variety into the wild on World Turtle Day. About 600 Cantor's giant soft-shell turtles were let into a river in northeastern Cambodia. After people collected the species from a holding pool, Cambodian monks blessed the tiny creatures, then set them free. The Wildlife Conservation Society was the organizer of this event. It said that only a few records of Cantor turtles have remained in Laos, while they have mostly been wiped out in Vietnam and Thailand. The body has so far released over 1,500 hatchlings into the wild in 2022. Artists in a small town in the United Kingdom have created a massive bumblebee mural, hoping to raise awareness about this vanishing species. The mural was painted on the playing field of a primary school in the town of Haptonbridge. It was debuted on International Bee Day. The artist used paints typically used to draw lines for football pitches. Scientists say rising temperatures and heavy pesticide use are contributing to the decline in the number of bumblebees across Europe and North America. They say the population reduction rate is consistent with mass extinction of a species altogether. Children at a school have also created a wildflower meadow to help encourage bees to pollinate. A print art exhibition chronicling nearly a century's worth of artistic achievements by a Chinese woodcarver has been unveiled in the city of Suzhou near Shanghai. The carved into wood exhibit features nearly 80 of Huang Yongyu's wood blocks and prints. Woodblock printing is a form of Chinese art dating back hundreds of years. In this form, patterns are carved out of a thick sheet of wood to create a type of multi-layered surface. Then ink is applied in various stages to print the image and its colors. The humble 98-year-old artist said during his years of practicing art, he learned that sincerity mattered more than technique. The exhibition was launched in collaboration between Suzhou Museum and the Beijing Fine Art Academy.
Persian fallow deer is a unique but endangered species known for its sleek and spotted body. In this report, our correspondent Youssef Jalali takes us on a quick tour around one of the world's few protected shelters of Persian fallow deer in Iran's city of Sari.
We had to keep quiet and avoid making any sounds to film them, as they are shy and swift, and the slightest sound could send them sprinting and jumping away. Over 60 Persian fallow deer roam in Dashtanaz Wildlife Refuge in Iran's northern city of Sari. The endangered species is carefully protected here to be safe from predators and poachers.
The Persian fallow deer is native to Iran's Khuzestan province, but due to loss of habitat and threats posed to them by predators such as jackals and wild cats, they are endangered and need to be protected in semi-natural refuges like this one.
Persian fallow deer are mainly indigenous to open woodland areas spanning from East Mediterranean coasts to West and Southwest Iran. By 1875, they had gone extinct in all of their main habitats, except in southwest Iran. After a captive breeding program, the population has rebounded from only a handful of deer in the 1960s to over 200 individuals in Iran.
Dashtanaz Wildlife Refuge is 55 hectares wide. It was introduced in 1962 as a shelter for the Persian fallow deer when the species was on the brink of extinction. At that time, 5 deer were captured and translocated to this refuge. Over the past 6 decades, their number have been multiplied through captive breeding.
The Persian fallow deer is a rare ruminant mammal belonging to the family Cervidae. They're physically larger than other fallow deer, and their antlers are bigger and less palmate. Their special beauty has turned this sanctuary into a hot tourist attraction in Iran's north.
This sanctuary is a tourist destination for visitors who would like to see the Hyrkanian forests in Iran's north and at the same time enjoy the wildlife and learn about efforts made to save the Persian fallow deer from extinction.
In 2015, the Persian fallow deer was registered in the IUCN Red List of Threatened Species. Dashtanaz authorities hope through continued captive breeding, the population of these special creatures will soon reach the desired number, and hopefully they will be reintroduced to their natural habitat in southwest Iran.
While they live far from their original habitat, these alluring creatures feel at home here, where they will be safe from the dangers lurking outside, which may lead to their extinction. So here, Persian fallow deer continue to embellish the nature and charm visitors with their beauty. Youssef Jalali from Dashtanaz Wildlife Refuge in Sari.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
While the people and the legitimate government of Yemen, led by the popular Ansarullah movement, are eager for extending the 2-month ceasefire worked out on the eve of the fasting Ramadan, with aggressor Saudi Arabia, despite the latter's frequent violation of the same, the United States of America is busy trying to fish in troubled waters. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Kayhan, international staff writer. This article is published under the heading, Yemen Firmly Against Zionist Infiltration in the Region. Here's the story.